Kunjavihari Gopi Janavallabha Girivardhari Gopi Janavallabha Girivardhari Yashoda Nandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yamuna Tiravanachari Yamuna Tiravanachari Yamuna Tiravanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Gopi Janavallabha Girivardhari Janavallabha Girivardhari Gopi Janavallabha Girivardhari Yashoda Nandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yamuna Tiravanachari Yamuna Tiravanachari Yamuna Tiravanachari Jaya Om Vishnupad, Paramahansa Puri Raja Gacharja, Arshtotara Shatit Shishi Mad, His Divine Grace, Iskan Founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada Ki, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki, Gaura Premanandi. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Vasudevaya Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto, chapter 8, text. This section has no easy meter, so we just read it as prose.
Kriyayam nirvartyamanayam antarale api uttayotaya yadainam upachakshita tarhi vava savarsha pati prakriti stena manasa tasma ashisha Asashte svasti stad vasta te sarvata iti. Kriyayam.
The activities of worshipping the Lord or performing ritualistic ceremonies.
Nirvartyamanayam.
Even without finishing.
Antarale.
At intervals in the middle. Api, although,
uthaya, uthaya,
repeatedly getting up,
yada,
when,
enam,
the deer calf,
abhichakshita,
would see,
tarhi vava,
at that time,
saha,
he,
varshapatihi,
Maharaj Bharat,
Prakritistena,
happy,
Manasa,
within his mind,
Tasmai,
unto it,
Ashisha Ashashte,
bestows benedictions,
Svasti,
all auspiciousness,
Stat,
let there be,
Vatsa,
O my dear calf,
te
unto you,
sarvataha,
in all respects,
iti,
thus, translation purport by His Divine Grace,
Srila Prabhupada ki.
When Maharaj Bharat was actually worshipping the Lord, or was engaged in some ritualistic ceremony, although his activities were unfinished, he would still, at intervals, get up and see where the deer was. In this way, he would look for it, and when he could see that the deer was comfortably situated, his mind and heart would be very satisfied, and he would bestow his blessings upon the deer, saying, "My dear calf, may you be happy in all respects." Purport. Because his attraction for the deer was so intense, Bharat Maharaj could not concentrate upon worshipping the Lord or performing his ritualistic ceremonies. Even though he was engaged in worshipping the deity, his mind was restless due to his inordinate affection. While trying to meditate, he would simply think of the deer, wondering where it had gone. In other words, if one's mind is distracted from worship, a mere show of worship will not be of any benefit. The fact that Bharat Maharaj had to get up at intervals to look for the deer was simply a sign that he had fallen down from the spiritual platform.
Om Agnati Mirandasya Gyananjala Shalakaya Chakshunditamena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
This shows how much even an advanced devotee can fall due to the power of Maya. And we are very fortunate because we have association of other devotees. If he had had association, it would have been clear. They would have said, "Prabhu, you're getting off track." So the association of Vaishnavas is the most valuable thing, actually. Most valuable thing. Because they can help us. We can get bewildered by our own false ego into thinking that we're performing devotional activities when we're actually off track. But if we are associating with devotees, we can be corrected and brought back to the path. That's why it's so potent. Therefore, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur did not select an acharya. As he was getting old, everyone was thinking, who shall be the next acharya for the Gaudiya Math? Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati deliberately did not select a successor because he felt that none of his disciples were actually qualified to be
the Acharya, or if one was, later on he would be self-manifest, as Prabhupada was. But he passed away at the end of 1936, the very end of, first day of January 1st, 1937. And he said, there should be a GBC. That's where Prabhupada just took that from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, a governing body commission. In other words, a set of devotees who would get together, so if one gets off track, the others can correct it. Because in Kali Yuga, it's very rare to find a highly qualified soul. Very rare, actually. The Nityasiddhas, those who did not come to this material world to imitate Krishna, are so rare. Our line is very rich because it happens to have a whole set of them. But outside of that, it's so rare. At any time, there may not be a single one on this planet, Nityasiddha. There may be some sadhana siddhas who achieve perfection through sadhana bhakti. There's three ways. There's kripa siddha, sadhana siddha, and nitya siddha. Nitya siddhas, as Prahlad Maharaj explains in the seventh canto, he said, I was sent to this world to show what it means to be a pure devotee, how ecstatic it is to be a pure devotee. So they're actually sent personally by Krishna. They're so exalted we cannot even imagine. We hear stories in ISKCON. I don't know if this is actually true, but perhaps it is. It should be researched. The devotee said that Prabhupada said that he was with Krishna in the spiritual world, and Krishna said, please just go and write your books. And Prabhupada said, but it's very austere, you know, preaching in Kali Yuga, having a material body. What a great austere it is. The material body is considered like a prison uniform. You may protest, I'm a good person, but the uniform is there. Prabhupada said this. This is straight from Prabhupada, we can be sure. In one lecture he said that. That actually, everyone who's wearing a physical body, aside from these rare select group of Nitya Siddhas, everyone else came here with a nefarious motive to imitate Krishna. We left the spiritual world not in good standing. We left with bad motives. So we're to be corrected. So for a pure person like Prabhupada to take on a physical body, that's a big, heavy austerity. It's a big austerity, actually. So the story we hear is that Krishna said, don't worry, he was talking to Prabhupada, don't worry, I will make it easy. Just go and write your books, I'll take care of you. You don't have to do too many austerities. I don't know if this is actually the case. Have you heard this story? I've heard it many times in my 30 years. Have you heard that story? Is he the source for that? And Krishna said, just go write your books and then you can come back to me. So we really don't quite appreciate that we're just looking for some yoga or meditation maybe, and we stumbled in the door. We don't know that we came to the very highest of all possible spiritual practices available on this planet. There's no higher form. Even the other three Vaishnava sampradayas are not as exalted because they're aiming at Vaikuntha, whereas we're aiming at Goloka, Vrindavan, the personal association of the original form of Godhead. In the first canto, chapter 3, text 28, Shukadev Goswami says, Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam. After listing the principal avatars of Vishnu, Shukadev Goswami reminds us that Krishna is not one of those avatars, although he's actually listed. If you read the first canto, chapter 3, carefully, Krishna and Balaram are listed there, just like everybody else. Kalki comes along, Buddha, and Ramchandra, Nrisingha, Matsya, Kurma, these are the principal avatars. Shukadeva Goswami also says that the avatars of Vishnu are numberless, just as the waves on the ocean. He gives that example. And Prabhupada writes in one purport in the first canto that the incarnations of the Lord appear in every species. One day we were having a Bhagavatam class and Sanyang Bhadra Narayan was saying, well, does that mean the tarantula incarnation and the scorpion incarnation, which says in every species. We were again joking, and Dravidan, Bhadra Narayan, and other devotees were just discussing, what can this actually mean? Can there be a caterpillar incarnation of Krishna? A tarantula incarnation? So, but it says like that. In other words, the number of incarnations is actually vast. At least that much we can be completely sure of. But Krishna is the origin. He's the original form. So he has the most complete pastimes, because in nectar devotion, there's a very detailed analysis. The fascinating thing about Vaishnav theology is it's very detailed. So there it's described, there are 50 qualities that living entities can have, and then there's 55 more qualities that Lord Shiva has, and then there's 5 more qualities that Narayan has, and then there's 4 additional qualities, bringing the total to 64, that only Krishna has. There are 4 super excellent, that's the word, Prabhupada created a new English word, that's not a standard word, but Prabhupada the conqueror has the right to impose his linguistics on the, he conquered our hearts. So he has created this word, super excellent. Krishna has 4 super excellent qualities that even Narayan does not have. These involve Krishna's playing his flute, his wonderful pastimes in Sri Vrindavan Dham, and the intimate exchanges that he has with his associates. So that's why the personal relationship with Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan is considered the highest kind of spirituality available anywhere throughout all of creation. It is the most relishable and the most detailed. There are so many details given, the qualities. The Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is like a technical book. It's like a physics, the physics of transcendence. Whereas other religions are definitely have an element of sincerity, like the great Catholic saints. Their sincerity was tremendous, actually. St. Joseph of Cupertino is described about his life. And they mostly came around the time of Lord Chaitanya. This is something fascinating also. Lord Chaitanya didn't leave India, but his influence was felt all over the world. In Europe, there was a spiritual renaissance, St. John of the Cross, St. Teresa of Avila. And they were actually humble, and they were God-conscious. They just considered themselves to be the servant of God. And because of their intense austerities, they actually developed mystic powers of various kinds, especially levitation is the main mystic power described among the Catholic saints. And they would levitate. They could stay up in the air for 15 minutes while offering prayers to Jesus with great sincerity. Tears were coming out of their eyes. They were crying and praying and to Jesus for deliverance of others. It's very similar to the 6 Goswamis. And their diet was also very similar. Essentially nothing. St. Joseph of Cupertino, he would eat only every second day. And what he ate was just a few vegetables. Of course, they're vegetarian. Any serious spiritual practice involves vegetarianism. So he would eat not every day. That was considered fallen. That's too much sense gratification. So every second day, and he ate a few vegetables, and he added some dirt to them to make them taste bad, so there would be absolutely no sense gratification. To ensure that sense gratification would not enter in, he made, and that's exactly what Raghunath Das Goswami did. This is fascinating to see in a culture utterly unrelated to Vedic culture. The culture of Europe is, well, there's a distant relationship as Kshatriya is driven out of India, but that was a long time, thousands of years before that. So at the time they were practicing, it could only have been internal inspiration from Krishna or Paramatma. It would make them do these kinds of austerities. And he was just happily doing, wasn't tough for him. The other monks in the monastery were not as advanced. These were specially advanced monks in the ashram. So he was praying to Jesus and happily doing his austerities, eating as little as possible, because sense gratification in higher spiritual circles is considered offensive. In Anchalila chapter 6 of Chaitanya Charitamrita, the story of Raghunath Das Goswami is given, wherein it is stated that not even one time throughout his entire life did he give his tongue any sense gratification. He made sure that he would never eat anything for sense gratification. Why is it offensive? Because Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. And any time we try to imitate Krishna in any way, shape, or form, we're actually imitating God. That's the whole disease. That's the reason we came here. That's the cause of our downfall, is trying to imitate Krishna, even subtly, Even if you lead a kirtan and you don't say anything to anyone else, but you're thinking in your heart, I led a really great kirtan and I'm actually better than everybody else, that's offensive. That's a subtle. It's offensive on the subtle platform. It may not cause you gross difficulties. Ultimately, it will if you maintain that, but it cuts you off from Krishna. Simply thinking like that, that you did anything independently, is actually a subtle fall down, because Krishna's position is he is the supreme enjoyer and the supreme controller. And we left the spiritual world because we weren't happy with that concept, to put it mildly. So we have to be very introspective. Muni, the Muni or sage, is someone who looks inside and actively uproots all psychological tendencies that separate us from Krishna. The goal of Bhakti Yoga is to awaken our loving relationship with Krishna. And there are many things inside that are not conducive to that. There are many anarthas that are directly against this awakening of love for Krishna. So we have to, if you're greedy to get love of God, then you're going to be actively seeking and ferreting out, where is this nonsense? Why am I not experiencing ecstatic love at every second? It's because I'm maintaining a psychology that's displeasing to Krishna. And it's up to me. Krishna's offered me all facilities to advance in spiritual life. It's entirely up to me. The rate at which I progress is entirely up to me. I can become Krishna conscious very rapidly if I'm really intense about it. So St. Joseph of Cupertino, he had this consciousness, although he was totally out of the Vedic system, never read any, the Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita was not available at that time in Europe. But he was going on doing his austerities, and he would just walk around the building telling monks, how beautiful is God, how wonderful is God's mercy and love. And then he would go into ecstatic trance and he would levitate and stay up for 15 minutes. But then he got worried because they began glorifying. This is such an extraordinary thing that the local townspeople he was living, it's called Cupertino, as a little city in Italy. So thousands of people would flock to see him daily, and he didn't want to be honored. See, this is another symptom of a genuine devotee. He does not want to be respected. So he would take to meditating in private. He could no longer attend the public kirtans, if you will, or functions in the monastery, because whenever they would begin reading the glories of Jesus, he would go into ecstasy and levitate off the ground. So he went to pray in private, but in those days, because everything was very clumsy and crude, the technology, the keyholes were very large, because the key was essentially a big chunk of metal, very gross and crude. So you could actually see through the keyhole. So people would be staring through the keyhole, and he'd be up 3 feet off the ground, you know, just praying and begging in ecstasy. So there is a genuine tradition of that. Unfortunately, it seems to have eroded in Western religion. But wherever sincerity is present, if you actually want God, because God is in your heart, Paramatma, he'll tell you what you need to do. You have to give up sense, you have to give up gross sense gratification, you have to give up subtle sense gratification. Those are the impediments. That's what separates you from your loving relationship with Krishna. So if you want to have a loving relationship with Krishna, you have to get rid of these things. And even persons totally unacquainted with all the Vedic philosophy that we have at our disposal, they can succeed. At least they can reach higher states. They can go to higher states of awareness. They can approach God. Going back to Godhead, that's an interesting question, if they could actually get back to Godhead without knowing who God is. This is a fascinating theological question. Can you go back to Godhead if you don't know who God is? So they got as far as you can get without knowing who God is, which is impressive on their part, because we have much greater facilities, but most of us are less advanced, actually, than St. Joseph of Cupertino. Most of us are struggling with desires for gross sensual gratification or subtle gratification. So we should offer all respects to genuine persons in other religions, but quantitatively, just analyzing how much information is given, in the Vaishnav, especially the Gaudiya Vaishnav Shastras, is just astronomically superior to what is available in other religious systems. They have no conception. If you read the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it's like a technical tour de force of information, that the 64 qualities of Krishna are listed in great detail. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, the 25 qualities of Srimati Radharani are listed in great detail. All of these amazing, inconceivable, transcendental qualities of Krishna and his purest devotee, Srimati Radharani, and the standard symptoms of ecstasy in devotees who are jivas, who are not in any special category, like Srimati Radharani is in her own category. She's actually the personification of the Hladini Shakti. Every morning we sing Prahlada Hlad. So Hlad means spiritual pleasure, actually. Hladini, it's actually long alien. Hladini potency is the ecstasy potency of Krishna. It's one of the three subdivisions of his internal energy. Sandini, Samvit, and Hladini. So that's what we're looking for, is spiritual pleasure, spiritual nectar. And that's Srimati Radharani is the personification of the Hladini Shakti. So all the happiness we feel in devotional service is simply the mercy of Srimati Radharani. But she is so exalted, she's actually thinking all other devotees are better than her. I don't know how it is possible for her to think like that, because she is simply the greatest devotee of all time. There's no question of anyone ever surpassing her. There's no question of anyone equaling her. Her position is unique, and it's unchallenged, unequaled anywhere, unsurpassed, anywhere in existence. And she's even so exalted that Krishna has to surrender to her. When Krishna performs activities that displease her, she will not see him, so Krishna has to go and beg. He has to fall at her feet. As he's crying, his tears are washing the lotus feet of Srimati Radharani. We can hardly, these subject matters are so exalted. For those of us who are still struggling with gross and subtle material desires, these subject matters are so astronomically beyond our conception, but they're purifying to hear. In the Bhagavatam class, there are a range of topics presented, many of which are beyond our adhikar, but hearing them is itself the process, because we're getting purified. As the topmost Bhagavat reciter, Shukadev Goswami, says in 1st Canto, chapter 2, text 17, Srinvatasva kata Krishna punya shravana kirtana hridyantosto hyabhadrani vidunoti surit satam. So this is an amazing verse. It says if you hear with attention and interest, you have some taste for hearing, if you're hearing with that rapt attention, then the result is the Paramatma, who is in your heart and your best friend, he cleanses desire for material enjoyment. So having material desires is not a fundamental impediment to advancing. We all have. If it were, we'd be finished. No question of advancing. If the prerequisite were that you will be free from material desires, we'd be hopeless. The process itself is so potent. This verse is a great verse, and the purport is extremely powerful, actually. First Canto, chapter 2, is a special chapter. It's packed with a lot of really potent instructions, basic instructions. So 1.2.17 says that Paramatma is just waiting to take away your material desires. He's ready to help you. Sometimes devotees think, I have too many material desires. It's impossible. Okay, we know that it says you can get, but sometimes it feels overwhelming, like an avalanche of material desires. That's because we're not relishing the hearing and chanting process. If you relish hearing and chanting, material desires are annihilated. They are destroyed. Material desires only linger when we're not hearing and chanting with taste. So then you say, well, how do I get to the hearing and chanting with taste? Well, the verse right before that, 1.2.16, is fascinating. It says, by rendering service to pure Vaishnavas, you automatically get knowledge and detachment. Simply by serving pure devotees of the Lord. This is the insignificant result of serving devotees. It's not insignificant in the beginning, but Haridasa Thakura says later on, of course, once you're past the struggling stage, it's insignificant. But it's a byproduct. Knowledge and renunciation are a byproduct of proper execution of sadhana bhakti. So acquiring knowledge and renunciation, that's very valuable for neophytes. That's what we're all struggling to get. And it's easily attained by serving a pure Vaishnava. So the whole focus of your existence, if you forget everything else, just remember, I must serve Prabhupada's mission with great intensity. I may be the most fallen person, full of material desires. It doesn't matter. That's not a problem. I mean, it's unfortunate, but that's where we're at. And you can't get rid of that instantaneously, but it can be gotten rid of it by dedicating your life to the mission. This should be our entire focus. How can I serve Prabhupada's mission? If you take this seriously, like I took it seriously in the end of the 1980s, so when communism fell, I went to Russia and Europe, and I got tremendous mercy. Just preaching, if you just throw yourself headlong into the mission, distributing books and preaching, the results are immediately available. You feel it directly. Temple service is also extremely valuable and must be done for neophytes. But side by side, there can be the preaching mission. There must be the preaching mission if you want to advance rapidly. So this is our great Vaishnav theology, and these are all testable things. It's like a scientific process. Anyone who goes out and tries to distribute books, you'll feel the result the next day when you chant your rounds. It's very ecstatic, chanting rounds, if you've gone on and genuinely tried to distribute books. In 1973, Rameshwar was the Sankirtan leader. Rameshwar Prabhu was Sankirtan leader in Los Angeles, and his service was to write. He developed the first Sankirtan newsletter, and he was writing ecstatic. He was reading as the first things of the Chaitanya Charitamrita were being translated. Adilila chapter 7 about how the Pancha Tattva distributes love of God and makes no distinctions. It's a wonderful chapter. Adilila chapter 7 was so important, actually, that Prabhupada had it published in advance as a separate book that you can still see those old, the thin. It's Lord Chaitanya in 5 features. It has a reddish cover. Maybe those who were here in the 70s, they recall that book. Lord Chaitanya in 5 features. And on the cover, it has a beautiful picture of Prakashananda Saraswati lifting up Lord Chaitanya in Varanasi by the hand as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was sitting by the dirty wash water and manifesting an effulgence more brilliant than millions of suns. It says in Adilila chapter 7, he manifested. He didn't usually do tricks like this, like yogis do kind of tricks, mystical tricks to attract people. Prabhupada says when you're dealing with less intelligent folks, such things may be required for preaching. Lord Chaitanya, he just blew everyone's mind. He took the humble position. He sat by the dirty wash water, because sannyasis walked barefoot in India at that time, 500 years ago. So Lord Chaitanya just came to this assembly where the Mayavadis, Prakashananda Saraswati was the chief of 60,000 Mayavadis in Varanasi, which is the homeland of impersonalism. It's one of the main centers of impersonal philosophy for many years. So he came there, and they were studying Vedanta. They were studying the Shariraka Bhasya, which is the commentary by Shankaracharya. What they call Vedanta is actually only the Shariraka Bhasya. They're missing the real sutras, as Lord Chaitanya explained to them. So Lord Chaitanya came there, and the sannyasis walked barefoot. So he came to the temple. Every Brahmin's home was a temple, essentially. So, and before you come in, you wash your feet. Then they have a little place there with some water to wash your feet. And then you come and you sit on a more raised, a higher level where all the other sannyasis. But Lord Chaitanya remained sitting by the dirty wash water. He just sat down there. So they're thinking, well, that's right, because he's an inferior person, so he should sit there. But then he began to manifest an effulgence more brilliant than millions of suns, and their minds were completely blown, because how can someone be humble and yet at the same time have a lot of power? Because if I get some power, I'm sure not going to be humble about it. I'm going to make sure that everybody knows about it. So they couldn't figure him out. Prakashananda Saraswati, he was bewildered. He said, "Your Holiness," he addressed him with respect, because the effulgence was, it says there, millions of times. That's not my speculation. This Adilila chapter 7, millions of times more brilliant than the sun. So in a room like this, it would literally be blinding. It would almost be a blinding experience, like the Brahman effulgence, which is their whole goal. They're all talking about, the Mayavadis are interested in merging. The urge to merge is the prominent feature of their philosophy. They want to become God. Actually, Sarvam Bhattacharya says there's two kinds of merging in Madhula chapter 6, to merge into the effulgence of the Lord, and even more abominable than that is to merge into the body of the Lord. That's even more offensive, to want to be God directly. So there's these different flavors of offensiveness within the Mayavadi camp. Madhula chapter 6 is a discussion, long discussion between Sarvam Bhattacharya and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Adila chapter 7 also has a long, these are two important chapters for if you want to defeat Mayavadi philosophy. Adilila chapter 7, Madhula chapter 6. Because Sarvam Bhattacharya and Prakashana Saraswati were two of the greatest scholars in all of India. They were extremely famous. They had many thousands of disciples. Although Sarvam Bhattacharya was a grihastha, he was teaching sannyasis. And Prakashana Saraswati himself was a great sannyasi and super austere. These are like Brahmins from birth, born in a long series of family, a family which had been Brahmins for many lifetimes. They were super austere and they were very puffed up, of course. They would address each other as Namo Narayan, good morning Narayan. Namo Narayan, like when they would see each other, that's what they, and they were serious about it. You can read about this in Adilila chapter 7. It's amazing how they somehow they had this conception of being Narayan. So Lord Chaitanya, he didn't come there like to show off. He came there very humbly. He sat by the in an inferior position, and then he manifested a power which none of them had. So they instantly became highly impressed. It was effective. His strategy of preaching was highly effective. So then they, Prakashana Saraswati, he lifted him up. You can see in this beautiful picture on the cover, it's also in Chaitanya Charitamrita, a beautiful picture with Lord Chaitanya exhibiting a massive effulgence. It's really well done. And Prakashana Saraswati and many other of his disciples standing there, and Prakashana Saraswati is lifting Lord Chaitanya by the hand with respect, saying, don't sit there, come sit, explain what you're doing. Every day we see you dancing in the streets like a bhavuka, a sentimentalist. They called him a bhavuka, someone who is a sentimentalist. Bhava means ecstatic, spiritual emotion. But they put him in the category of a sentimentalist because being Mayavadis and therefore offensive to Krishna, they couldn't experience genuine bhava. For all their dry analysis, they were cut out of the mercy of ecstatic love. So Lord Chaitanya, he was seated in the midst, they seated him in the midst, and then he began to explain, you know, why he was dancing. They said, why are you dancing like a fanatic, a sentimentalist? This is the activity of shudras. A shudra may dance in a drunken state in the street, but a Brahmin, what to speak of a sannyasi, and what to speak, you're actually in our sampradaya. Because Keshava Bharati was a secret agent, a Vaishnava secret agent situated in the Mayavadi sampradaya. Lord Chaitanya took initiation in there are 10 different sub-branches of Shankaracharya's Mayavad Sampradaya. So there, one of them is the Bharati Sampradaya. And the Saraswati Sampradaya is considered superior. So the Prakashana Saraswati, actually it's a long I on the end, it's goddess Saraswati. So she's like the goddess of learning. So the topmost of the Shankaracharya Sampradayas was the Saraswati Sampradaya. So of course Prakashana Saraswati was in that lineage. And Lord Chaitanya was in an inferior lineage. This is explained by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya in Madhya chapter 6. And he said to Gopinath Acharya, his brother-in-law, he said, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is in an inferior sampradaya, but I can reinitiate him and bring him into a better Mayavad, a higher grade of Mayavad sampradaya. Gopinath Acharya was a pure devotee. He said, don't you realize that he's the supreme personality of Godhead? And it's absurd and ridiculous that you're suggesting he didn't even need to take sannyas at all. This is a preaching trick. Sarvam didn't recognize that at the time. So Prakashana Saraswati said, you actually belong to our own sampradaya, although of a lower status. But still, I mean, you should be doing what the sampradaya does, which is the austere study of Vedanta, not dancing in the streets. What is this dancing and chanting? That's what gypsies and shudras and chandalas do. But at the same time, you have so much power. You have the effulgence more than any of us. Can you please explain your situation? So Lord Chaitanya began. At every step, he was freaking them out. He had them off balance psychologically. He took control of the whole scene. It's brilliant if you read this chapter, how he took control of their minds, essentially. So he began again taking the humble role. He said, my spiritual master called me a fool, a murkha, murkha deki. Mora, how does it go? Mora, guru, mora. Koila shasana. Shasana means chastisement. He chastised me. Seeing me to be a fool, he chastised me. Guru mora, murkha deki, kaila shasana. That's the Bengali. So he chastised me because he considered me a fool and said, you're not qualified to study Vedanta. Although he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he's saying like this. And why, Prabhupada says in the purport, because to show the numberless fools, that's the word Prabhupada uses, of Kali Yuga, that in this age most people are not qualified to study, just sit and study Vedanta. How far would we get without the chanting of the holy names and the kirtan and prasad? I don't think any of us could really be practicing. Maybe Jai Jagannath Guru, because he's very austere, a special background. That the rest of us would be in deep trouble. So again, Lord Chaitanya is instructing. This Vedanta, it's just theoretical. And actually the worst thing is they're not even studying Vedanta. They were studying Shariraka Bhasya, which is Shankaracharya's imaginative interpretation of Vedanta. Deliberately, he was misleading them. So actually they're fools, because they didn't know that the very thing they're studying and putting all their energy into is a deliberate creation of Lord Shiva in the guise of Shankaracharya, just to mislead them. So Lord Chaitanya, he began to explain these things. And their minds were blown at every step. He completely finished off their Mayavad conceptions. He turned them into pure devotees, all 60,000 of them. It was considered the most astonishing religious conversion of medieval India, the scholars will tell you. The Vaishnavas understand that it is actually an inconceivable thing, because if you try to preach to New Age people, it'll be very tough to preach to them. You know, Buddhists, Mayavadis, and New Agers, it's very tough because they have this conception. They don't like to acknowledge that God is superior. They don't want to surrender to Krishna. So they have so many reasons not to surrender to Krishna. So it was actually a most amazing religious conversion, because they became fired up, Vaishnavas. So much so that the next time Lord Chaitanya went to the temple of Bindu Madhava to have a kirtan, he went. There were two devotees, Chandrasekhar and Tapanamisha, who were pure devotees. They were sent there by Lord Chaitanya in advance. So he went with them and they began chanting the holy name in ecstatic love. Lord Chaitanya began chanting and exhibiting ecstatic symptoms. He was jumping high into the air, and his body, the hairs of his body were standing on end, and tears were falling in from his eyes in ecstatic love. So he was chanting with those two devotees, and as soon as the Mayavadis heard it, thousands of them, they immediately came and joined in the kirtan. That's how much he had converted. And they joined enthusiastically. They had a huge kirtan. Everyone was chanting in ecstasy. The whole city of Varanasi was struck with wonder. How amazing it was that these persons who were totally against Lord Vishnu, the supremacy of Vishnu, Lord Chaitanya convinced them by his personal beauty, by his scriptural erudition. He described to them what the defects were in the Shariraka Bhasya commentary. Step by step he described it. After he described to them the glories of chanting the holy name, the ecstasy of chanting, then they said, we accept that, because their hearts were beginning to change. But can't you explain something about Vedanta? Why do you avoid the study of Vedanta? Can't you say something about Vedanta? Is there something wrong with it? That's why you don't study it? And Lord Chaitanya began explaining that the sutras themselves are glorious. They're as brilliant as the sun. But the Shariraka Bhasya just simply covers the sutras by imaginative, speculative interpretations. And he actually convinced them. Adilalita chapter 7 goes through and describes the mistakes in the Shariraka Bhasya. What Shankaracharya did is to say that Vyasadeva was mistaken in saying that Krishna expands his energies and creates, but retains his primordial personality. That's what Vyasadeva says in Vedanta Sutra. That the act of creation by Lord Vishnu himself does not become transformed when he expands his energies and produces the material energy. He does not himself become transformed. That's what Vyasadeva is saying in Vedanta Sutra. But Shankaracharya, he twisted, he had to do something. He had a tough job. He's a pure devotee. Imagine if your guru came to you and said, you have to preach Mayavad philosophy. What would you do? I don't even know how to begin. So Lord Shiva, he's so pure, he took the order of Vishnu on his head. And he said, okay, what am I going to, I have to come up with something. So what he chose to do is to say that Vyasadeva was mistaken. That Vyasadeva's thesis that the Lord expands his energies but retains his primordial personality is incorrect, that Lord Vishnu himself becomes transformed and is therefore lost in the course of creation. So Lord Chaitanya, he began explaining, this is in Adiyuga chapter 7, it's a very brilliant chapter. Everyone should know the chapter. So Lord Chaitanya began explaining how Shankaracharya, and it was a deliberate strategy. When they heard it was a deliberate strategy, their minds were blown. They realized they had dedicated themselves foolishly to a false philosophy. Their hearts were already beginning to melt by Lord Chaitanya's spiritual power. He was actually conquering them by his beauty and by his spiritual potency. And then when their mental delusions were cleared away by his scriptural erudition, then they just melted. They surrendered. They became his devotees, all of them. They were the most famous Mayavadis, practically speaking, of all of India, along with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. This was a stunning thing, actually. Prabhupada had this published in advance as a whole. It was a little paperback booklet, Adilila chapter 7, Lord Chaitanya in 5 features with a beautiful picture on the cover. And it was to be distributed. And so Rameshwar, when he began his service to the BBT there, he was very fired up about book distribution. So he began quoting, he began interspersing nectarian quotes from Adilila chapter 7, how the Panchatattva made the rains of love of God fall from the sky, inundating the whole world, and just anyone who came in contact with the Panchatattva, they got love of God. Even they're totally unqualified, because Lord Chaitanya made no distinction between who's fit and who's not fit. This is extraordinary. This is when Matsya or Kurma or Nisringha, these are all worshipable forms of Godhead, but they didn't do these kind of amazing things. There's one pure devotee of Lord Chaitanya named Prabodhananda Sarasvati, and he wrote a book called Chaitanya Chandramrita. Chandra Amrita. It's not Chaitanya Charita Amrita. It's Chandramrita by Prabodhananda Sarasvati. And in his ecstatic glorification of Lord Chaitanya, he even appears to be minimizing these other avatars like Ramchandra and Nisringa and Kurma and Matsya. He said, so what if Ramchandra killed the demon Ravana? So what if Lord Varaha lifted the earth planet when it fell into the Garbhodak ocean? So what if Matsya rescued the Vedas? It appears he can do this because he's appeared in his ecstatic glorification of Lord Chaitanya. He's even minimizing these other forms of Godhead. So what if Nrisingadev killed the demon Hiranyakasipu? The real thing is that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is handing out on the streets to the drug addicts, fools, morons, and Mlechas of Kali Yuga. He's giving the highest ecstatic love of the gopis of Raj Dham. He's handing it out freely to the fallen person. So the lowest persons are getting the highest thing. It's such a disparity. See, in the Puranic accounts, like in Srimad Bhagavatam, you do your yagyas, or you do your meditations, and you become a pure devotee, and you go back to Vaikuntha, but you're already in a Brahmin family. You're fairly elevated. You're not struggling with the regulative principles. So it's an elevated person, a Brahmin, becomes a pure devotee and goes back to Vaikuntha. So that's like not as wide range, and it's not, the disparity is not as great as in our age. The persons who can't even follow any principle, the lowest of the low, are getting gopi bhav. They're getting vraj, what the ecstatic love of the residents of Vrindavan are experiencing. So Prabhudananda Sarasvati, he's a great pure devotee of Lord Chaitanya, one of the associates of Lord Chaitanya. He's glorifying Lord Chaitanya's book left and right, up and down. He's saying, "This is, forget about everybody else. Forget about Matsya Kurma, Ramchandra, and the Sringadev. Worship Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because he's giving you, in a few years, he'll give you the highest thing, which in previous ages, like Valmiki, had to meditate for many thousands of years. Or Dhruva Maharaj. Well, Dhruva got it in 6 months because he was so intense. But the process in those days, like you can read about Prithu Maharaj, he went off to the forest and had to do heavy austerities in the winter, sitting in the freezing cold river. No, he didn't install a heater. He went out looking for the more austere conditions. Like St. Joseph of Cupertino, they would sleep on the bare, cold, hard floor in the wintertime. You know, it was like in the 40s in Italy and Spain. They were looking for austerity. That was the process in previous ages. If you don't have the mercy of Gauranga. So that's why our position is so... We don't really realize how exalted this process of that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is giving. The process itself is faster, the sadhana process, and the goal is astronomically superior. We don't really know where St. Joseph Cupertino or these other great Catholic saints went. One devotee told me that Dhanavir Maharaj said that Jesus came from Janaloka. Actually, it was Bhakta Brandon, who is just here. And Dhanavir Swami would not speculate, so he may have greater knowledge from an obscure shastra. You can write to him. This is a fascinating thing. Bhakta Brandon just told me a couple days ago that Jesus came from Janaloka. You know, above Svargaloka, everyone should read, this is later in the fifth canon, everyone should know that the setup of the universe, the planetary systems. Above Svargaloka, and everyone should know what Svargaloka is. Svargaloka is the heavenly planets where Indra is enjoying heavenly delights. That's called Svargaloka. But above Svarga, there's, I forget the sequence, it's Maharloka, Janaloka, and Tapaloka, or something. Those three are there. Does anyone remember? Because you have such an excellent memory. It's Tapaloka, Janaloka, and Maharloka. I forget the order of those three. But these are where great sages are meditating. It's even described in Brihad Bhagavatamrita on one of these three that Vishnu personally appears when they're doing yagyas and accepts the offerings. So these are extremely elevated planets. But they're not quite yet ready for Vaikuntha. They still have some impersonal tinges. They're not quite ready to fully surrender to the will of God. But they're very elevated sages. They're not struggling with the four regular principles, that's for sure. These sages on Jhana, they have all kinds of mystic powers. They have tremendous, they can travel anywhere in the universe on Janaloka. These are very exalted planets. Tapaloka, Janaloka, and Maharloka. So, according to Bhakta Brandon, and we should check this, Dhanavir Swami said that Jesus came from Janaloka. He's one of those great exalted sages, so perhaps his followers can be elevated to that planet. So then we have to understand how far superior. Lord Chaitanya is not giving you Vaikuntha, which is even better. He's giving you Goloka Vrindavan, where you can mount Krishna's shoulders after defeating him in a wrestling match and demand that Krishna carry you around the fields of Raj, the pasturing grounds of Raj Dham. You can joke, you can make fun of Krishna and minimize his position. That's what the cowherd boys do. They do it all the time. So this is wonderful to see the whole picture, the larger picture of theology. It's like a comparative theological exposition of how everything, all the different religions fit together. And we don't look down, we do not disparage or denigrate or look down on others. That's not the mood of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We are very humble. The mood is Trinadapi. So we offer great respects. Saint Teresa, she also wanted to avoid glorification. Saint Teresa of Avila, they began, these three, it's documented, Saint Teresa, Saint John of the Cross, and Saint Joseph of Cupertino, they all levitated in public view in front of hundreds of people and stayed up for many minutes, not just bouncing up and down like some groups could do. They were really saints, and their life is, you see, to be a genuine saint, their total life was serving God. in their own way, in their conception of Jesus, they were always praying. They were fixed up. They were nishta. They were completely fixed up in their service to Jesus. They had no gross sensual desires. They were beyond all gross attraction because they fasted for many days and they ate nothing. When they would eat something, it was tiny and insignificant, and put some dirt in so it wouldn't taste good. So they had these genuine powers, these three, actually. And because people began to glorify them, they tried to avoid the glorification, which is another genuine symptom of Vaishnavas. So we should offer them all respects. They're very elevated personalities. But we have to also understand that our Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya is something very special. That's the main message of the class, is that the Gaudiya Sampradaya is a very special. Sampradaya means group or lineage, a spiritual lineage or group or party. Our particular Sampradaya is a very special thing. We didn't realize it. We just wanted some relief from the onslaught of Kali Yuga when we stumbled in the door. So we are so fortunate. We should thank Prabhupada. Prabhupada is the one who brought it. He could have stayed in Vrindavan. The other members of the Gaudiya Math, they decided there was no need to go to preach in the West. So if Prabhupada thought like that, we wouldn't be here today. We should be so grateful to Srila Prabhupada that he was willing to undergo all these austerities. And he was sent directly by Krishna. That's another amazing thing. Sent personally by Krishna to this material world. So thank you very much. Are there any corrections or questions?
Hare Krishna Guru, thank you very much. You're mentioning we will advance according to how intensely we apply the principles of Bhakti Yoga. I was wondering, and you're also mentioning, you know, as we progress, the tendency is to get kind of puffed up if we notice, oh, I'm feeling nice or whatever. So, how can we take on austerities with the hope of making advancements, but at the same time check and curb this tendency to then become very puffed up very
this
quickly?
Is an excellent question, and it's answered in Majjhima chapter 7. We have discussed the leper Brahmin Vasudev. So he was personally cured. I told the whole pastime. It's a beautiful pastime, actually. He had leprosy and the worms were falling off, and he was putting each worm back in the same place because he wanted to give the worms their sustenance. He was such a humble person. He thought, my body is useless, but at least let it do some good to other living entities. So when a worm would fall and his body was rotting, that's how horrible it was. He had a really advanced stage of leprosy, and worms were falling out of his body, and he would put the worm back in the same place. I don't think any of us, and he was cool, he was relaxed, he was going on with his devotional act. He was actually a pure devotee, a very exalted soul. Totally off the bodily concept of life. And he never asked Lord Chaitanya to cure his leprosy. See, that's another thing. If a religious system has evolved to the stage where the only thing you're asking for is material benefits from God, then that's missing the point. Modern Christians, unfortunately, have this focus is very prominent among modern Christians. But the great Christians like St. John of the Cross, they were not asking God to give them material things. They just wanted to serve God. So modern Christianity has diverted severely from the glorious heritage of these great saints. So Lord Chaitanya came and embraced him. He fainted, having just missed Lord Chaitanya. This is Majjhima chapter 7. It'll melt your heart, actually. This Majjhima chapter 7. It will completely melt your heart. It's also Sarvabhauma's separation after he was transformed and made into a pure devotee. Then Lord Chaitanya said, I'm going to South India. Sarvabhaumacharya said, if my son dies, I can tolerate it, but how can I give up? His heart was breaking. Everyone's heart was breaking. Lord Chaitanya was leaving Jagannath Puri to bestow his mercy more widely. They tried every trick to keep him there. The devotees would do anything, but finally he had to go. So Sarvabhaumacharya, he fainted. He just fell on the ground. He couldn't. Because he said, I've been a Mayavadi for so long, and now finally you turn me into a Vaishnava, and I'm drinking the nectar of ecstatic love of God and in the personal conception, which is so superior, and now you're going away, and Sarvam was fainting, and everyone would faint. Anyone who missed Lord Chaitanya would faint, just fall on the ground. Gadadhar was crying, he was begging, and he said, let my vow to Gopinath go to hell. So everyone, they would beg, borrow, and steal. Lord Nityananda would cheat and lie. Everybody. Maybe cheating and lying is not considered a normal form of devotional service, but this is how attractive Lord Chaitanya was. He was so inconceivably beautiful and loving and personal. Everyone's heart would just melt. So Lord Chaitanya left the home of the Kurma Brahmin to continue on his way towards South India, and the leper Brahmin just got there a few minutes late. And he fainted. He couldn't tolerate. How can you imagine you're just missing Lord Chaitanya by 5 minutes? Wait another 8.6 billion years to see Lord Chaitanya. I think that's reason to collapse on the ground and begin crying. So he was laying there crying, and the worms, you know, his body is full of worms, and leprosy is an utterly disgusting condition. So Lord Chaitanya, he's the super soul in everyone's heart. He's omniscient. He's literally omniscient. So he returned to the spot, and he picked up the leper Brahmin and embraced him. And this is not my speculation. It's directly stated. Instantly, that his body was transformed from the horrible rotting flesh. It was transformed into a beautiful, golden, perfect, beautiful body that looked like Lord Chaitanya's body. So he was struck with wonder. Imagine all of a sudden you're embraced by Lord Chaitanya and your body changes completely. And then immediately he said, Lord, I'm going to become puffed up. It's inevitable. How can I not become proud? Everyone's going to come. And people are about to come, the rest of the village, and they're going to see me and they're going to understand what happened. I mean, you can't really hide a golden body. It's kind of difficult. So what to do? He asked, he begged, then he fell at the feet of Lord Chaitanya and said, this is actually dangerous for my spiritual advancement. I'd rather have all this horrible. I'd rather look horrible. I was doing my bhajan. I was worshiping you. You know, I'm making advancement, but now I cannot make advancement because I'm going to become so puffed up, so proud. And here's what Lord Chaitanya, he answered your question. He said, you constantly chant the holy name of Krishna. Because if you're constantly chanting, your mind doesn't have a chance to become puffed up. This is a very important theme of Chaitanya Charitamrita, constantly chanting. Haridas Thakur said, Nirantara mantra lao. Lao means to take. Take the holy name, Nirantara. Antara means end. Nir means without. Nirantara, without stopping. Haridas Thakur told again and again, chant constantly, because if you're chanting constantly, the demon-like mind doesn't have a chance to derail your bhakti. It's the demonic mind is always looking for a chance to turn you into an Aravana and Hiranyakasipu once again. In the japa period, every subject matter is okay except Krishna's holy name. You can think about anything else, but not Krishna. So you have to understand, it's war, it's open warfare. You're declaring war on the mind. There's no compromise. It's a demon. Well, actually, it's not even conscious, but it functions in a demonic mode of operation. And if you listen to it, you're going to be a demon. Open war. You have to. And how to conquer it? You don't have the power. If you just go into battle with no weapons, you're going to be wiped out. How to conquer? By the name. The name is the weapon. It's the process for Kali Yuga. So when you chant your rounds, there should be nothing else. It's just you and the holy name. This is your total life and soul. This is the life. This is like the lifeline. If you're thrown into the ocean of Kali Yuga and the devotees are throwing the rope, there's the boat, you know, in the ocean of Kali Yuga. Everyone has seen the painting. So we're drowning in the ocean of Kali Yuga, and the holy name is the merciful Vaishnava. Srila Prabhupada has thrown the rescue rope. You should hang on to it like you're dying, like you're drowning. We have to have this mentality when we chant. It shouldn't be lackadaisical, oh, it's another japa period, and I can think about anything and everything else. And what time is breakfast anyway? You won't last, actually. Maya's too, she's too powerful. You cannot. The only way you're going to survive and advance, we don't just want to survive, we want to advance, is that the holy name must be your life and soul. Bhaknyo Thakur said there's nothing else to be had in the three worlds but the holy name. Okay, so we don't have it. Lord Chaitanya said, he identified our disease, we have no taste. In Shikshastra, verse 2. Okay, big trouble, we don't have any tastes. So verse 3, how to get the taste? Trinadapi sunichana, be humble. Cultivate humility. Understand that you can't even move your hand without Krishna's help. Cultivate humility and then chant with every ounce of concentration, every Hare Krishna and Rama. You have to chant with ultimate, unlimited, every ounce of power in your command. You have to put into listening to the holy name. This is the austerity of Kali Yuga. If you do this austerity, this one austerity is enough to help you advance in bhakti yoga. Just when you're chanting your japa, you just everything else out and just the holy name, not just the sound vibration. All philosophizing is to be done before and after, but when you're chanting, you should just focus and then go on. It doesn't hurt to chant more rounds. If it helps you to become more purified and more dedicated to Prabhupada's service, a couple extra rounds will not destroy some vast eternal plan.
A personal question, and I have a question based on what you just spoke. My first question, based on what you just spoke, I have a doubt that although in Chaitanya Charitamrita, privately Lord Chaitanya advised everyone, including the grihasthas, to chant constantly, which I always found quite remarkable. I know in one purport in the 18th chapter of the first canto, Prabhupada says that chanting the holy name under the guidance of a pure devotee is offenseless chanting. So I was wanting to maybe know about the role of pure devotee in this constant chanting, because in the recent past we did have a devotee who was trying to chant 64 rounds a day. And that made him, I felt it made him quite proud, because he would be impervious to any other instructions or advice from other Vaishnavas. And because he felt that it was interfering with his chanting of the holy name of Krishna constantly. So I was wondering that sometimes when we take up those types of austerities, it actually helps to nourish pride in the heart.
But I'm not advocating that we chant and do nothing else. We should chant our 16 rounds with tremendous concentration. As I was describing, every ounce of your concentration has to be put into the 16 rounds to hear the holy name. And after that, we should be chanting while we're doing our other services, as you're going around washing, especially temple services. Here's something great about temple service. You can be chanting while you're washing pots. You can be chanting while you're cleaning the floor. And in deity worship, there's all kinds of mantras involving names of Vishnu. In fact, mantra is supposed to accompany. Jiva Goswami says in Kali Yuga, all other forms of devotional service should be accompanied by mantra, and there's the Maha Mantra. So as you're going here left and right, and even when I'm distributing books, in between people I chant. If you really put your mind to it, you can be chanting a lot. You can really be chanting a lot. And on the other side, Prabhupada did in New York, it is in Lilamrita, and confirmed to me by Umapati Maharaj, who was there at the time. I knew him in the 80s. He said, Prabhupada initially said 64 rounds. When the devotees began crying and begging, then Prabhupada said 32 rounds. Okay, we'll try 32 rounds. Oh, then they, more crying and begging, 16 rounds, but that's the bare minimum. Prabhupada always said minimum. If you chant a couple extra, like 18, if you're chanting nicely and you're getting in and you're feeling purification, there's nothing wrong with chanting a couple extra rounds. But we're not advocating chanting all day to the exclusion of the other kinds of devotional service that Prabhupada wanted us to do. As you advance, your taste for the holy name will increase, and you'll actually want to chant more. That's a good sign. We should. When we reach our 16th round, if we feel like throwing the bead bag in the locker and not seeing it again, that's a bad sign. That means those rounds were not quality rounds. They were mayic rounds. They were aparad. See, there's three stages. There's nam aparad, nam abhas, and shuddha nam. So at least We should be trying for Namabhas, which is the clearing stage, where there's some taste. There should be some taste. So yes, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya advocated, but he advocated for all kinds of people, not necessarily advanced. And the point is, we should chant as much as possible. There were some Brahmins who invited Lord Chaitanya to lunch. And Lord Chaitanya said, I will only accept lunch from one who is a Lakshesvara, a master of, what is a lakh, 100,000? 100,000. 100,000. So he said, Lord Chaitanya said to the Brahmins, I will only accept lunch from one who is a master of 100,000. And they said, where are we going to get 100,000 gold coins? Nobody has that kind of wealth. And they were all morose with downcast faces. And Lord Chaitanya understood their misconception. He said, a Lakshesvara, Ishvara means controller, one who can chant 100,000 holy names a day, 64 rounds is 100,000 names. And then their faces lit up. They said, from today we're going to do it. We're going to chant 64 rounds. If you're not a preacher, this is another point. If you're not actually engaged in preaching, then extra rounds is very beneficial. And temple services and deity worship, these are all very purifying things if you can't preach. But preaching is so exalted that 16 rounds is enough. But we can't minimize the 16. They should be properly done. 16 rounds properly done. And then the best course of action is to only chant 16 rounds and then go out and study books all day. That's the first class. That's the Paramahansa formula for advancing in ISKCON. But not all devotees have... For some devotees, it's hard to distribute books, for example. So then you can go with the Harinam party. You can get into it gradually. That's in the early days, in the 70s, when you joined as a new bhakti, you would first do Harinam a lot. And then you're feeling great happiness. You're chanting the holy name 8 hours a day on the street with Vishnujan Swami. And everyone's feeling great happiness. And when you feel some little purification and a little tinge of compassion, you spring up and distribute a book to one of the standard passerbys, and you start to get some taste from that, because there's a lot of taste in being compassionate, in trying to help other people. So you do a book, and then you go back and you chant another few hours, and then the next day you do two books, and you think, wow, this is really tasty. There's some taste in books. So you began distributing more books gradually, and then, like Tripurari Maharaj explains, like he began leaving the Harinam party because he was so fired up that he just wanted to give them mercy. He's a rare soul. Prabhupada called him the incarnation of book distribution, Tripurari Maharaj. Not everyone can be like that, but we should, out of duty, we should go out, and you can do the Harinam like summertime. If you miss the summertime, you're really in bad shape, because in the winter it's much harder. Don't miss the summer. I'm telling everybody. Everyone sitting in this room, we're going to have lots of Harinams coming up. We're going to have devotees joining the ashram like students, so we'll have 20 people, 15 or 20 people every day. It's your chance to get the mercy. It's so easy to just sit there and chant, absorb yourself in the holy name. After singing with attention for an hour, then your heart gets a little bit purified, and you can lunge out with a book and give someone the mercy. And then you only have to do a couple. And this is the way you gradually and happily. It's not like being thrown suddenly into the Pacific Ocean. You know, it's like you gradually work into it slowly, and then you become attached to book distribution. For those of us who are already doing it, they're very exalted souls, and they can just continue. But for us who need more holy name, it's a ratio. You can like gradually work in the ratio of the holy name to book distribution. And some souls, Vishnujan Maharaj was special. He just chanted, and Tamal Krishna tried to get Prabhupada to force him to also distribute, and Prabhupada said, no, he's achieved perfection through chanting. So there are some devotees who are already very pure-hearted, and they just love chanting, and they should be encouraged to do that. There's different levels and different... Not everyone is the same in devotional service. But we can all fit together in a cohesive force to spread Krishna consciousness, and we'll all make a lot of advancement. The summertime, if you don't sit in the temple in the summertime, you should kick yourself. If you miss out on the summertime, the mercy of going out when everyone's out on the street, try to go out on the street and distribute Krishna consciousness. Then you'll feel your own spiritual advancement being made tangibly. So you had also a personal question?
Yes, I was wondering about, you often speak about going to Braja, how Lord Chaitanya has come to give Braja Prema and so on, which is of course very attractive. I was wondering how we hear, particularly from the Chaitanya Charitamrita and also in the Bhakti Rasamrita and the other sources, about the principles of rag marg in order to attain braja, and how other forms of sadhana can lead up to Vaikuntha, but the rag marg or the raganuga sadhana leads to braja prema and so on. And a lot of devotees outside of ISKCON tend to like to emphasize this and attract a lot of devotees from ISKCON to their camps. So I was wondering about that. My question is, we don't in ISKCON normally hear about those types of principles per se, the principles of rag marg leading to braja prema and so on. But we do hear about the goal of Goloka and the goal of braja prema, but we don't hear about the process that is supposed to get us there according to Chaitanya Charitamrita. So I was kind of wanting to know how we should understand that.
Thank you for asking. This is very, it rounds out and makes a complete package of what we're talking about. Prabhupada, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur did not approve of the Siddha Pranali, which means when a guru tells you who you are in the spiritual world and you're supposed to try to act like that and meditate like that. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur considered that most of us are utterly unqualified for that. Because if you cannot artificially imagine that you're like Mother Yashoda or Nanda Maharaj and try to sit all day and meditate like that. We're too much in the lower modes of nature. Our mind will constantly be deviated from that. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta got rid of that, at least for in his temples, in his Gaudiya Math. And he stressed going out and preaching and intense chanting of the holy name. The chanting of the holy name itself reveals everything, if accompanied by service to the mission of the spiritual master. Two things you have to do. You have to work hard for the spiritual master's mission, and you have to chant with great attention. And then the guru within your heart, the guru also resides as antaryami, as cheta guru in the heart. The Lord or the spiritual master can appear in your heart, either one, and lead you towards this higher thing. But that's way, way up there. None of us, I cannot say that maybe some of us are on that level. I am certainly not, and I suspect most of us are not. So therefore, Prabhupada was also very strongly against this. Trying to imagine, especially if you speculate who you are in the spiritual world, that's really, really bad. Devotees who tried to do that, there were a couple in ISKCON, and they wound up falling down. In the first stage is you try to pretend that you're like Nanda Maharaj, and all day long you're going around being like the father of Krishna. And you do that for a few weeks, and after a while then you start breaking regular principles. And there was a Gopi Bhava Club in 1975 in Los Angeles. The Gopi Bhava, has everyone heard of this? These things, there are books like Lilamrita that describe the history of ISKCON. ISKCON's history is a fascinating thing. I love it totally. It's a totally amazing... There are two books by Vyasaki Prabhu called Radhadamrita Vilas, Volume 1 and 2, and he's coming with a third one. Then there's a book called Servant of the Servant by Tamal Krishna Maharaj, which is a super book. And then there's, of course, the Lilamrita by Satsarup Maharaj. And then there's the Great Transcendental by Korma. That's another 800-page book. So there's about 3,000 or 4,000 pages worth on history of ISKCON. It's fascinating and very instructive. All the deviations that you could imagine have already been dealt with. Between Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's instructions to the Gaudiya Math and Prabhupada's instructions in the 70s, we've cornered all the apasampradayic influences. Bhaktivinoda Thakur lists 13 apasampradayas in his commentaries on Chaitanya Charitamrita. So these are standard deviations. The material mind is always trying to do this. There's nothing new. It's always going for these kinds of things. The premature speculation about your position in transcendence when you're just struggling to follow the regular principles is ludicrous. So Prabhupada and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta emphasize two things. You work very hard for the mission. You go out and distribute books. I know devotees are getting tired, like they're always hearing me saying this. But it's truly, it's your life and soul. This is what's going to save you. Harinam and book distribution. The holy name is everything. Chant the holy name. Vishnujan Maharaj, he didn't distribute books, but he chanted. So we work together. We have a team. We have a Harinam and some chanters and some book distributors. The whole summer long, 8-10 hours a day. We just get absorbed. The result of this gradually is that you will begin, first you get free from gross sensual desires that are attacking us, gross sensual, bodily to gratify the physical body. And then you want honor and respect from everybody in the temple. And after a couple decades, you actually get beyond that too, realizing that to be untouchable stool, like Raghunath Das Goswami says in the Mana Shiksha, his book, it's like the trickling urine of a donkey. The desire for pratishta, for name and fame, Raghunath Das Goswami says that's like the trickling urine of a donkey. So after a few decades, hopefully, I mean, some people take many lifetimes, other people like Parameshra do it in a couple years. So they will reach a stage, then you're free from gross desires and subtle desires, and you're actually feeling tremendous inspiration for all aspects of sadhana bhakti. Then you're in the stage of Raghunuga Sadhana Bhakti. And Lord Chaitanya explains to Sanatana Goswami in Majjhila chapter 20, and some, there's a long series, 20, 21, these are big chapters. Siksha, Sanatana Siksha, the instruction of Sanatana Goswami, you begin to feel in your heart attraction for a certain personality in Vrindavan. It happens automatically. Nothing externally changes. You go to Mangalartik, you don't show off, because part of your advancement is you don't want people to recognize that you're advanced. Someone who flaunts his bhakti is not a genuine devotee. That's a sahajya. Prabhupada struggled to restrain on a few occasions when he couldn't, and it came out, his ecstatic symptoms. But a real Vaishnava does not cheaply show his advance. It's considered vulgar to show off in the streets that which is most dear to your heart, your love of God, your internal relationship with Krishna. So there will come a time, this is natural, in the course of your advancement, when you actually begin feeling a real genuine attraction to particular rasa with Krishna. And that's internal. It's happened internally, just by a holy name and distribution, preaching. So that's what is emphasized. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Prabhupada, again and again, million times, all over the purports. Anyone who reads Prabhupada's books, he makes it crystal clear. This siddha pranali, that's the technical term, when the guru tells you who you are in the spiritual world, this is not for us. Generally, it's among sahajiyas. There can be a few cases, like with Bhaktivinoda Thakur and some other very exalted persons, where that is done, but those are already very exalted souls. You're not going to find them walking around the streets of Chicago. Someone who's ready to know who he is in the spiritual world. If he were, he wouldn't be walking around in the streets of Chicago. He'd be a guru, you know. Some of our ISKCON gurus, you know, maybe on this level. We cannot speculate. Many of our ISKCON gurus are very exalted devotees, and maybe on this, but you don't show off. You don't talk about who you are in the spiritual world. It's not to be done. And you do not encourage others, and if you have disciples, you don't tell them who they are in the spiritual world. You emphasize what the great Thakur Saraswati emphasized. You go out and distribute Krishna consciousness. Except for this one, his disciple Akinchana Krishnadas Babaji, who was so exalted, he could chant all day. If someone is actually on that level, then Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, he would permit that. You have to judge by time, place, and circumstance, qualifications. There was also the Vanksidas Babaji. Everyone thought he was a madman, but Srila Bhaktisiddhanta recognized him as a very exalted, pure devotee. He was a genuine Babaji, an avadut. He would talk to his deities. He would negligently offer his deities, you know, just some anything, any ordinary piece of boga from wherever, and chastise the deities when he thought they were too independent. This is Vanksidas Babaji. Bhakti Vikas Maharaj wrote a booklet on him. He was not he looked like a madman. If you saw him today, you'd think he was a homeless bum. But he was actually a pure, exalted nityasiddha. He was seeing his relationship with Krishna at every second. He was detached. He wouldn't eat for a week. Then all of a sudden he would just cook something, offer to his deities and eat something, and go for a whole week. He didn't take a train. He would walk 1,000 miles. When he wanted to go from Navadvip to Vrindavan, he would just walk. He was very big. He was over 6 feet tall, very powerful. He was like Jada Bharat, physically huge and powerful, but totally off any conception of the bodily platform. So there are a few of these. We have to be very clear on you know, what is your adhikar, what is your qualification. We have to be honest with ourselves. As always, your questions are very relevant.
Okay. let me find a different spot here. I was just wondering, practically speaking, from your experience, from what you've seen so many of us try to go through Krishna consciousness, what, like as a universal principle, because as you were saying, everybody's different. In Krishna consciousness, we all have different level of adhikar, even coming to Krishna consciousness, so to speak, of after we start practicing. So, as a principle, when we try to approach Krishna consciousness, what should we look for that's going to sustain us? I mean, you've already mentioned very clearly the things that you've already mentioned, but within that, there's so many manifestations of how to do it, right? Preaching, you want to be a part of that. There's so many different things. Or chanting, there's different manifestations of how to be involved with that. What should we be, because it's on the onus is on us to be attached to the process, what should we be doing? What should we know when we come that I have to do so that I stay fired up in my Krishna consciousness and attached to the process?
So find the kind of preaching you can do. If you don't like to do book distribution, there's Harinam. And if even those two are unappealing, then you can do internet preaching or college preaching or science preaching. If you have vast intellectual prowess, then I can engage you for the next 300 years in scientific research. There's always something. If you're sincere, there's always something you can do. There's internet preaching, there's scientific preaching, there's college preaching. If you're not sure, then try doing book decision, which is the best. Prabhupada always said this is the best preaching. But not everyone can do book decision seriously for a long time. I'm a failure. I tried many times. So then, but there's something you can do. If you're sincere, you'll do something because you're greedy to get Krishna conscious. You're not going to say, oh, I can't do anything and just sit around and lament. You have to do something to get yourself out of anarthas. You have to find something that's tasty for you in Krishna consciousness. And the summertime, I would recommend suppose you don't like to go out on book distribution or Harinam, but in the summertime, do it anyway because that narrow window in time is so advantageous. It's so good for your advancement. Just go out on Harinam. You just sing the holy name and then do one book a day. After 8 hours of chanting and ecstasy, just spring out and give one person a book. It's not a big austerity. You can go back to the temple and, you know, we can see the deities. Just do one book a day keeps Maya away. Just one book a day the whole summer and chant like a madman. Next summer you'll do two or three books a day. And then after 5 years you'll be doing 20 or 30 books and then you may actually get attached to books. It's possible to get attached to book distribution. Give it a try. Always try for the highest, and if you can't do the highest, then back down a little bit. But summer is a unique opportunity for going out and doing things on the street. In the winter, you can't do it. No one wants to, even if you can tolerate the cold. No one else wants to. So don't miss this summer. Now it's the perfect time. It's May. It's the end of May. Now it's like the perfect time to get geared up, to get psychologically geared up to do it. Even though my service is this kind of intellectual kind of stuff, still I go in the summertime, I go out and distribute books and do Harinam. Because it helps you, it nourishes, it's your nourishment, it's your spiritual nourishment. It's going out and giving Krishna to others. Even this lever, Brahman Vasudev, Lord Chaitanya, in the very end of Madhyalavita 7, he said, the only thing I ask is that you also preach, along with now you have this beautiful golden body and you're chanting constantly, so you're basically back home, back to Godhead. He's a pure devotee already. The only return, Prabhupada says the purpose, the only return Lord Chaitanya wanted was that he preach Krishna consciousness. It says that right in the end of one of the last purports in Madhyalavita chapter 7. Even that person who was so exalted, that Brahman who got a golden body, a beautiful golden form, and is a pure devotee and chanting constantly. So Lord Chaitanya wanted him to preach. So it's preach. I know everyone is hearing this a million times, but it's just that. It's really that. It's preaching. And preach to other devotees too. Give class. Giving classes in a very, it enlivens you from within the heart. Just speaking about Krishna, it's so enlivening. When you're deeply in Maya, run to another devotee and just start talking about Krishna. When you feel like Maya's going to drag you out the door, you're down, you know, on the ground, and you feel it like it's hopeless, down for the count, you know. You're gasping on the floor of the Brahmacharya ashram, that it's impossible, like my material desires are too strong. Just run over to somebody and start telling them pastimes from Lord Chaitanya's leelas. It's so it's instantly enlivening to talk about the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, or the pastimes of ISKCON and Prabhupada's pastimes. These are the instant inspiration. And then there's so many other, the pastimes of Ramchandra are wonderful pastimes. I could speak, I love the Ramayana, it's actually so amazing how Lakshman killed Indrajit in a duel. It's so amazing. All these things are completely, there's an infinite leela. The leela is going to help us. Really, leelas are going to save us. We all know the philosophy. You're not supposed to engage in sense gratification. Everybody knows that. But how are you going to, it's the holy name and the leelas of the Lord that's actually going to get you the taste. We need the juicy taste. The intense kirtan and the discussion of the pastime. So every night we're actually reading. Every night from 7:15 till 8:30, we're reading downstairs, Pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. Everyone is welcome. Matajis can also come. We can find a bigger room if your wife wants to come. No one is, Lord Chaitanya is an equal opportunity employer. He does not distinguish between caste, race, and creed, and gender. Everyone gets the mercy. Srila Prabhupada ki.